This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Coming later in the hour, we will visit with Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser and also hear from Cynthia Lejeune Nobles. Her book is the Fonville Winans Cookbook, and both Governor Nungesser and Cynthia will be commenting on tomorrow's book festival in Baton Rouge. Big event. A lot of authors from around the country will be convening in downtown Baton Rouge. 877-217-5757 is your number. And we're joined in studio by John Wirt. Hello, John, as I try to regain my voice.
Hello, Jim.
John.
Very unusual for you to lose your voice. I don't think I've ever heard you do that.
I've done it, but I think I'm choked up about the loss of Antoine Fats Domino a few days ago. Great is a word that is often overused, including by yours truly, but he was truly a great musician and great personality and ambassador for the great state of Louisiana.
Well, the most famous musicians from New Orleans are Fats Domino and Louis Armstrong. And if Fats sold 65 million records, which is the figure I most often see, I've also seen 110 million records. So
I think it was 65 million singles.
65 million singles. Well, he sold, I'm sure he sold more records than Louis Armstrong, even though Louis Armstrong sold many records.
Oh, yeah. And Fats went on and on and on. It started in the late 40s, so 70 years. He was kind of like Frank Sinatra. His career spanned seven decades, and he was still going almost up until the very end.
No, he had pretty much retired. He had retired from performing.
When was his last performance?
He was supposed to play at the New Orleans Jazz Fest in 2006, the first post-Katrina Jazz Fest, and he did not play. He didn't. He said he didn't feel that well. He went to a doctor, and he actually did go to the fairgrounds. He came out on the stage, and he waved to people. And I think he said a few words, and that was it. He did not perform, which was, of course, a huge disappointment. I remember seeing just throngs and throngs of people, disappointed people, leaving the Acura stage, which is where he would have played.
So you're saying his last performance was pre-Jazz Fest, or pre-Katrina?
He played briefly at Tipitina's in 2007. I'm pretty sure that's the year.
So about 10 years ago.
And that's on film.
Yeah. So he was pushing 80 when he gave his last performance, and I mentioned Sinatra. He died at 82. Domino lasted until he was 89 years old, and of course he was displaced from his home, his famous home in the Ninth Ward with Katrina. And there are all kinds of stories, and I know you have lamented the fact that there have been some inaccuracies, and usually when people are about to pass away, these organizations get their act together and they do an obit beforehand. But there were numerous inaccuracies. Like one even said the Grambling football team rescued him, right?
Yes, I saw that. I'm pretty sure it was a report from a New Orleans TV station. A New Orleans TV station reported that. I've seen so many inaccuracies and inventions, assumptions, I suppose. I know right now in this news environment we're in at the moment, everybody wants to get everything out quickly and fast and be first. Mm-hmm. But I've just been amazed at some of the wrong things that I've seen in many reports. Even CNN. CNN, I couldn't believe it. The opening of the CNN report that I saw said that people in New Orleans were dancing to the beat of Fats Domino long before blues and jazz. I don't. That's so ridiculous. How could anybody come up with that? Again, inventions, assumptions. The speed at which they need to report, I suppose.
Well, that's unfortunate, but I'm envisioning the Grambling football team, which is 300 miles away, coming down in the middle of Hurricane Katrina and rescuing Fats Domino from his home in the Ninth Ward. I just don't think that happened. 877-217-5757. You're locally in Baton Rouge. It's 297-5633. You can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. John Pope of NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune had a nice obit for Fats. He says, Fats Domino, a portly piano-playing prodigy from the lower Ninth Ward, whose boogie-woogie way with rhythm and blues made him a pioneer in the development of rock and roll with songs such as Ain't That a Shame, Blue Monday, and I'm Walkin' has died. He was 89. Domino died 3:30 on Tuesday, according to that's 3:30 a.m., the Jefferson Parish Coroner's Office. A lifelong New Orleanian who dominated pop and R&B charts from 1949 until the early 1960s, lived in splendor in a house on Caffin Avenue until floodwaters overwhelmed his home along with the rest of the Lower Ninth Ward when Hurricane Katrina struck on August 29, 2005. After days of media speculation about whether he had survived, Mr. Domino was rescued from his second-floor balcony by boat. From then on, he lived with his daughter, Adonica, in Harvey. 877-217-5757, and we start with David in Atlanta. And Allie, I think you're going to have to engage the phone here. Can you, Allie, can you put David in Atlanta on? John Wirt is the guest. Just press the button, and we should be fine. There we go. David, good. Oop. Okay, we lost David. Do we have Beth Courtney calling?
Yes.
Hi, Beth.
Hi, Jim. I'm enjoying your conversation so much with John, and I just wanted to say that we had the privilege and pleasure of taping the last concert that Fats did in New Orleans at Tipitina's.
Very good. John referenced that, and I understand it was around 2007.
Yes, and we're going to try and replay that documentary, including all of the performance, sometime this week. Well, so look for LPB.org.
LPB.org, and you can hear and see Fats Domino in his final performance, which would have been around 79 years old. And I mentioned he still had it.
Oh, he did indeed. Although, as John, I think, referenced that, Eric Paulson was the MC for the event that night, and he came out and played, Fats did a few songs, and then went away. And Eric had to lure him back to the stage. We had our big production trucks there and everything. We were like, please come back and play more.
Well, I think anybody who has lived in Louisiana was influenced by Fats Domino, and he was not only a Louisiana treasure but a national one as well.
And
but he was also very shy. We tried many times to do interviews with him on camera, and he did not want to.
Notoriously shy.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Beth. We'll be looking for the final concert of Antoine Fats Domino. The Beatles wanted to meet him, right? And they finally did when they came to New Orleans for that memorable City Park concert, 16 September 1964. What happened when John Lennon and Paul McCartney and George Harrison and Ringo Starr met Fats Domino?
They serenaded Fats with his own songs.
Did they?
Yeah, they knew the songs. I mean, they grew up with him, and he's one of their big influences. So, yes, when they came to City Park in 64 to play, he's the guy they wanted to meet. And Domino, in fact, showed up to City Park, and they had apparently had a great, great, great meeting. And there's a beautiful picture of the Beatles surrounding Fats Domino.
That was 1964, so Fats at that time would have been 36 years old.
Still a young man.
Yeah.
Wow.
David in Atlanta. Good morning, David. You're on Talk Louisiana.
I lost all my possessions in Katrina, of course, including my CD collection. And when I made it to, that was in New Orleans. My home had 8 feet of water in it. When I made it to Baton Rouge, with some help from Jim Inkster, and I'm totally blind, with the clothes on my back, I got on a Greyhound and came to Atlanta. And one of the first things I did when I arrived in Atlanta, I got an apartment. I spent a lot of money on music equipment, and I started to replace my CD collection. And most of my CD collection, over 300 CDs, is New Orleans R&B, the Fats Domino, the Ernie Cato, the Irma Thomas, the Smiley Lewis, the Danny White, the Johnny Adams, and Tommy Ridgely.
Do you have any Huey Smith?
Greatest music of all time. And when I was a kid in the French Quarter where I grew up, I delivered groceries and newspapers. And if I would go into a hamburger joint or a restaurant and bar, you would always hear that R&B music. And if Jim would let me, there's a CD that I have. It's the best of Fats Domino. There's a title on there called Let the Four Winds Blow.
All right, I think we have that one. Allie,
I can play it for you right now.
well, okay, we'll try your version.
This is a live performance in the Fats Domino Band jams.
Well, tell you what, I think Allie's got it, so it probably would be cleaner if she plays it. So, Allie, hang on, David. Here's Allie with Let the Four Winds Blow from the great Antoine Fats Domino.
like the way you walk. I like the way you talk. Let me hold your hand. Try to understand. I want a girl like you. Tell my troubles to you. Don't be afraid. You heard what I said. Let the four winds blow. Let them blow, let them blow. From the east to the west.
Good stuff. Thank you for the
suggestion. Is that the live performance, Jim?
I think it is the live performance, yes.
Well, the band really jams, and it's wonderful band music. It's fabulous.
Well, anyone who grew up in New Orleans, as you did, David, in Atlanta, you know the impact of Fats Domino. And in fact, I see that one of your suggestions is now being considered to, instead of having Lee Circle, have Fats Circle.
Well, I proposed that a long time ago, and they should rename Canal Street to Fats Domino Boulevard.
We'll be back. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757 or locally 297-5633. You can send us an email, talk@talklouisiana.org. For John Wirt, who's with us for another segment, the remarkable music critic who spent 23 years writing reviews for The Advocate. His work sometimes appears at The Advocate and in other places, and he, like many others, is remembering Fats Domino. John is from Richmond. Did you see Fats perform a few times along the way?
I saw him perform after I got to Louisiana in 1992 a number of times. For a while there, he was playing at the Jazz Fest. Looks like every 2 years there would be Fats Domino at the Jazz Fest. And he played a Popeye's anniversary show at Wildenburg Park in the French Quarter there, and that was a great time. I took my cousin to that. My cousin, grew up with rock and roll like a lot of us did, but he's a little older than I am. So he was really delighted. I remember him looking around. We saw this very happy mm-hmm. crowd. The music's playing on the stage. There's Fats Domino, and my cousin says, "Everybody's moving. Everybody's dancing."
Well, a listener notes that there was a football connection to Fats Domino, not the Grambling team, but Jamarcus Russell, the former LSU quarterback, was involved in his rescue. What do you know about that, John?
Well, Jamarcus was going with Fats' granddaughter, Chantel. And so Fats, after being rescued by the New Orleans Harbor Police, was taken up here to Baton Rouge to the Assembly Center, the LSU Assembly Center. And, of course, you know, Jamarcus was a quarterback at the LSU football team.
Yeah, first player taken in the NFL draft in 2006 and 2007. It didn't work out so well in the pros for Jamarcus, although he did make $38 million. 877-217-5757. Listener asks, who gave him the name Fats? And I think it was a guy named Billy Diamond. Is that right?
Billy Diamond was a bass player and a band leader down in New Orleans, and Yeah, that's what I know, too, that he gave him the name Fats after some other piano players, such as Fats Waller. So he called Fats Domino, he called Antoine Domino Fats. Antoine Domino weighed 220 pounds, was 5'5" tall around this time that he got the nickname. Mm-hmm.
And that was at a time in America when the average male weighed about 160 pounds.
Yeah, so you could see the name.
He was a big man. John Pope, in his obit in the Times-Picayune, writes that in addition to entertaining people, Mr. Domino inadvertently helped break down racial barriers during a career that began in the waning days of Jim Crow laws that had been designed to keep races apart. The trade newspaper Variety reported that white fans at Mr. Domino's concerts outnumbered African Americans by 3-1, and Rick Coleman, his biographer, wrote that Domino's music was doing a job in the deep South that even the U.S. Supreme Court has not been able to accomplish with its groundbreaking 1954 decision outlawing school segregation. So he was a pioneer in many different ways.
All of that's very true for Baton Rouge, because many young white people in high school, kids, they loved Fats Domino, and that was their music. That and other musicians from New Orleans.
Did he perform in Baton Rouge?
Oh, yes. To CYO dance, that sort of thing. He played at the Metro Airport. I've heard from the Montalbanos that Fats was late in playing at the Metro Airport, and they were terrified that they would have a riot.
I spoke with Kenny Neal yesterday. I understand he put on an impromptu performance in tribute to Fats Domino, but he said he was influenced remarkably by Fats Domino, and Kenny is slated to be with us next Wednesday. But the song that he mentioned is the one that I think is probably most synonymous with Fats, and that's Blueberry Hill. And let's give it a listen one more time from Fats Domino, 1956, I believe, Blueberry Hill.
Found my thrill on Blueberry Hill, on Blueberry Hill. When I found you, the moon stood still on Blueberry Hill.
That made him a superstar in 1957. Fats racked up 30,000 miles playing 355 shows around the United States. He was hot. And it all started, John, when he was like 10 years old. That's when he started playing the piano, didn't he?
Started playing piano, yes. He loved a lot of the music that was going on at that time, like Amos Milburn, piano player, singer, for example. So he heard the records of the time, and he loved music. He started to play music. There was a piano in the house, as a matter of fact.
And Elvis Presley noted that his career was inspired by Fats Domino.
Yeah, it was very instructive that Elvis would turn to a reporter in Las Vegas, I think about 1969 or maybe earlier, and someone, a reporter, calls Elvis the king of rock and roll, and Fats Domino is in the room, and Elvis says, this music was around a long time before me, and there's a man that was there at the beginning. It's essentially, that's what Presley said. Yeah, he gave credit to Domino and others. He said, rock and roll is around a long time before I was.
Leonard in Lafayette. Leonard, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
I have this memory. I was there in the hurricane, and I heard the story that Fats was brought to the dome and told the authorities his name was Antoine, and they didn't connect him to Fats. And then the football player saw him and took him to Baton Rouge. Is that true or not?
I don't know. John?
I have read that he went to the dome. He ultimately went to the LSU Assembly Center and stayed with the help of Jamarcus Russell here in Baton Rouge. And then they went on, I think it was maybe Houston or Texas or something like that. And eventually he moved back to New Orleans, and his final home was in Harvey, Louisiana.
Right, and he was displaced, and we've had people comment on his house. Quinn Hillier, the conservative journalist, says he used to take tourists to see Fat's house on Caffin Street in the lower Ninth Ward. It was black and gold, I believe, John.
Yeah, very distinctive house with his initials on it.
FD.
FD.
Not AD, but FD.
Yeah.
FD. He was synonymous with the name Fats, a name that others had had. And in 1949, it was the Fat Man featuring his wah-wah vocals over a strong backbeat that made him what he was, and he was one of the first 10 members to be inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, 1986.
Yes, 86. And the Fat Man was his first recording. It wasn't supposed to be the A-side, but it turned out that the DJs and people liked the Fat Man more than the other side of that record. Because this is a time when we would have had a 78 with two sides, one song on each side. And Fat Man was recorded at Cosmo Matassa Studio there in the French Quarter. And Dave Bartholomew.
Mm-hmm.
You have to mention Dave Bartholomew in connection with Domino,
yeah,
because
found him, yeah.
That was Dave brought him to Lou Chud of Imperial Records. Dave was his producer, co-writer, arranger. It's a team. Dave and Fats are a team. And Dave is still alive.
He is in his 90s. Fats Domino's last top 100 record was a cover of Lady Madonna from the Beatles, 1968. And in 1968, Fats and his band stayed in the Lorraine Motel in Memphis just 2 weeks before the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. stayed there and was assassinated as he stood on a motel balcony, according to the PBS documentary. Fats Domino had come to town to play for striking garbage workers that Martin Luther King Jr. also came to address and support. So you talk about a full life. He had a full life. And John Wirt, you came here from Richmond, and you note that he was a shy man, didn't do many interviews, and I doubt that he talked to many reporters, but many of them were influenced by his music enough that they loved him nonetheless.
That's right.
Well, we will return and spend some time a bit later with Billy Nungesser, the lieutenant governor, who, of course, will remember Fats Domino, but there is the book festival tomorrow. Also, we're slated to hear from Cynthia Lejeune Nobles, the biographer of Fonville Winans cookbook. Now the news with Karen Henderson on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Our producer is Ali Baltazar, and our guest at this time is Cynthia Lejeune Nobles. She has collaborated with Melinda Rich Winans for the Fonville Winans Cookbook, and tomorrow Cynthia will be at the Louisiana Book Festival, as will many other authors from around the country, and you can see her and take a look at this remarkable book. Many have done books about Fonville Winans, including our friend Cyril Vedder, who perhaps has done the definitive one, but this one is about a different side of the American photographer whose black and white images dominated South Louisiana, documenting people in places like nobody else. And there was another side to him, and Cynthia has certainly undertaken a passion about Fonville that I think is worthy of public consumption. And it is, as stated, Cynthia, a side that many probably are not familiar with.
That's right. Most people think of Fonville as a photographer, and he was a fantastic photographer, black and white photos. At one point in the 1940s, he was the Louisiana state photographer, and I think it was during that time that he really became interested in food, because he would go around the state to the rice festival, the sugar festival. He went to salt mines. And he really became interested in cooking at that point, and he became his family's cook. He had a wife, three children, and he was the head chef at his house.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org for Cynthia Lejeune Nobles, who has a book fresh from LSU Press. It's a new book, The Fonville Winans Cookbook. And you note that his most iconic image, the Oyster Man, from 1934, when Fonville would have been all of 22 or 23, illustrates not only the renowned photographer's skill for portraiture, but also an appreciation for our state's edible bounty.
It was. That was a great photograph. As a matter of fact, Chef John Foles used it as the cover of his most famous cookbook. And Fonville spent a lot of time down in Grand Isle where he took that photograph, and he really had a connection with seafood. You know, he was originally from Texas, and he wasn't that familiar with Louisiana food when he moved here during the Depression, but he befriended all these guys down in Grand Isle, all the Cajuns, and they taught him how to make gumbo and how to fry fish and how to make etouffee. And that became his favorite cuisine, Cajun food, of all things, from this Texas boy. And he was really pretty good at it.
Well, he was born in 1911, but moved to Louisiana in 1928, by the way, the year of birth of Antoine Fats Domino, worked in construction, and during that time, he fell in love with the state and began photographing the state's swamps and wetlands. And of course, the food goes along with everything else, and he got into that as well. And you have, what, about 100 recipes in the book from Fonville Winans?
That's only a small amount of the recipes that he left behind, though. When he died in 1992, he left his daughter-in-law, Melinda Winans, over 300 recipes, and a lot of them were for the same thing. For example, he was really obsessed at one point with tamales, and he had over 100 recipes for tamales, if you can imagine that. So we picked the best ones and put them in this cookbook.
And the foreword is by none other than John Foles.
That's right. John Foles never actually met Fonville Winans, but he used his photograph, and he knew Fonville's son. And he was in awe of what the man did, especially with food, because not too many people in the state had been photographing food before Fonville Winans.
Well, tomorrow at 3:15, Cynthia will be at the book festival in the cooking tent, right?
Right. We're going to be demonstrating a couple of Fonville's recipes. Melinda's going to cook jambalaya. I'm going to prepare one of his famous desserts. It was a blackberry cobbler. Fonville liked to forage long before that was popular, in the 1950s and 60s, and he would go out in his yard and in the fields around his house, out around Goodwood, and he'd pick poke, thistle. Merlotons grew wild around there, blackberries, uh-huh. Of course, mushrooms. And he really enjoyed picking mushrooms. He even collaborated with a professor at LSU to learn about which were safe to eat. But a couple of times, he didn't pick right. He ended up in the hospital with mushroom poisoning. But that didn't stop him. He'd take the family out. That was their favorite Sunday afternoon outing, driving down Gardere Lane, picking uh-huh. mushrooms.
877-217-5757, and we'll go to the phone lines with Cynthia Lejeune-Nobles, who is the co-writer of the Fonville Winans cookbook, Recipes and Photographs from a Louisiana Artist. Cynthia will be at the cooking tent tomorrow at 3:15 at the book festival, and WRKF will also have a presence there, and I'll be there part of the day, I think starting at 3 o'clock, and you can meet many people who you hear right here on 89.3. WRKF. Dr. Hippolyte Landry calling in on Jefferson Highway. Dr. Landry?
Good morning, Jim. How are you, sir?
Fine. Good to hear your voice.
Good to speak with you. I knew Mr. Winans real well. I played a little music with him, but an interesting thing about him, back in 1960 when my sister Roberta got married, he went to her home that morning when she awakened and started taking pictures of her getting ready from day one, from the earliest hours of the day, all day long until the wedding, all through the wedding, and made up the book. It encompassed her complete day of her marriage, which was completely unusual at any time.
Well, he was an amazing photographer, certainly ahead of his time, and you know it from a very personal angle.
And Dr. Landry, he did that on the day of the wedding because he thought he could get the true joy of a bride in her face. He refused to take pictures. Yeah, he refused to take pictures of a bride before the day of the wedding.
And then he took pictures of me and my then wife at that time, and they were so descriptive of me, I didn't like it. But he was a great guy, and I did play a little music with him, but I'll never forget what he did with, like you said, when he went and got the bride from when she awakened in the morning for the whole day, which was completely unusual.
All right. Well, thank
you,
Dr.
He was a great guy, a number one guy.
Good to hear from you, my friend.
Thank you, son. Good to talk to you, Jim. Thank you.
Bye.
And enjoy.
Thank you, sir. Hippolyte Landry, who was a coroner for many years in Baton Rouge and has had a full life, to say the least. Now, Street Scene, 1930. By the way, the book has several of Fonville's photographs, which would have been inappropriate to have a book about this man without including that. But Street Scene in 1930, that launched his career in photography, and I'm looking at that. What a remarkable photograph.
It is a great photograph. He was only a senior in high school in Fort Worth, and he took that picture. He was shocked. He had never taken a photograph before. He had just bought a camera, and he won first place, and that's when he decided he wanted to be a photographer.
You have a chapter on his honing skills at LSU. Wednesday, September 12th, arrived in Baton Rouge, 10:30 a.m., boarded a streetcar for the university, arrived there in a daze, a total stranger in a strange place, from his diary in 1934.
Well, you know, the Depression kind of left his family high and dry, literally, because his father was a builder, and he had a bridge contract in Texas, and there was a horrible flood and ruined the family, and it ruined any of Fonville's chances of going to college. But when he arrived in Grand Isle, he met Alfred Danziger. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Danziger Bridge in New Orleans. And Mr. Danziger was Huey Long's attorney, and he helped Fonville go to college. He helped get him in, and when he was there, he bought him a camera because Fonville became LSU's official photographer. And then later, Danziger helped Fonville get a job as the official Louisiana State photographer.
Well, this was during the Huey Long years. Long was the governor. And, of course, Huey loved LSU and took great pride in everything about the university, including the band of which Fonville was a member.
Fonville was a member for a short time, though. He didn't like the regimentation of being in a band. He quit, and he joined a smaller band. And he would play in the cafeteria. He earned money that mm-hmm. way.
He lived in Beauregard Town, I think.
He did. He lived in several places. He lived in the old Pentagon Barracks. That's where he met his wife, Helen Collins, at LSU. He only stayed at LSU for a couple of years. He did not graduate because they got married, and they moved to Texas, and that's when he started trying to do professional photography. His first job, I believe, it was taking photographs of chickens for a catalog.
Wow.
And he couldn't get the chickens to look at the camera, so he would take a pop gun, shoot it off, and the chickens would pop their heads up, then he'd hurry up and take the photograph.
Well, he took photos of the famous and the infamous and the unknown, and I'm looking at one of Governor Jimmy Davis. He captured our singing governor in all his glory.
He did. He took the official photograph of every governor from Huey Long all the way through Edwin Edwards.
Here's one of snow. Yes, snow around the state capitol in 1940, an aerial photograph from Fonville Winans. That's an amazing photograph. You wouldn't think it was Baton Rouge.
What's amazing about that is when he took it, it was on his own private plane. He took the door off the plane and hung out upside down and took that photograph and several others in Baton Rouge. He had his own plane, and during World War II, he flew up and down the Mississippi River for the Civil Air Patrol looking for German U-boats. I don't think he ever found one, but I'm sure he had fun looking.
All right. Well, what's your favorite recipe that's in the book?
I would say it was the recipe he was most famous for, and that was his flan. He called it leg in a cast flan. He had broken his mm-hmm. leg when he was riding a bicycle in the 1960s, and he created this recipe then, and his family still uses it today for every special occasion.
Well, the book from Cynthia Lejeune Nobles and Melinda Reisch Winans, the Fonville Winans Cookbook, Recipes and Photographs from a Louisiana Artist, is available from LSU Press. And tomorrow you can meet Cynthia, and if you so desire, I'm sure you can buy a copy of the book as well. And when did this passion of yours for him begin as we head to our break?
I'm real good friends with Melinda. She and I used to teach cooking classes.
Well, I'm glad you've done it. It's a true testament to a Louisiana treasure. And coming next is our Lieutenant Governor, Billy Nungesser. We'll talk about the book festival and a bit more. Your number is 877-217-5757. Thank you, Cynthia. We're back after this pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. Ali Baltazar is producing. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on WRKF. And we're joined now by the Honorable William Harold Nungesser, the 54th Lieutenant Governor of Louisiana. And Billy Nungesser is the reason why we still have a book festival. Of course, budget issues have been severe in recent times, as we know. But this is the 14th edition, and I know you are proud that Governor, that things are going well enough that you're able to put this performance, this presentation on tomorrow that'll feature authors from around the country.
We really are. You know, we missed the year of Katrina, and then the year after, budget cuts. They didn't have it. But one of the things I talked about when I was campaigning about how important this is for the students and our authors. It gives them a chance to really not only present their books, but also talk about what drove them to write these incredible books, whether it's Pierre the Pelican about the marsh, a kid's book, or the political books we all love to read.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the 14th edition, and it'll be tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., downtown, State Library, the State Capitol, the Capitol Park Museum, and some other nearby locations, and some food as well. And you'll probably see a lot of luminaries like the Lieutenant Governor. And it is an event that I think that is appropriate for our state. Our literature is known almost as well as our food, and it happens on a week when LSU is off. So depending on the weather, which should be good, we should have a good crowd tomorrow.
Absolutely. And, you know, like any festival, we have food and music and 150 programs for kids, teenagers, and adults, and over 250 authors. So it's going to be hopefully our biggest. It's been growing each year the last 2 years, so we're excited.
Over 250 authors. And when I note how budget cuts have affected your budget, of course it precedes you, but you have to wrestle that bear every day, don't you?
I do, but you know, I tell you, we've got a great team of people, and we've gotten really creative creating this foundation with the state parks to start making money off our state parks with private-public partnerships, using the seafood promotion money. Instead of just buying ads, we're partnering, putting it on events like the chefs we took to South Carolina to cook the Louisiana seafood. That promoted seafood, and it promoted tourism. So we're getting more bang for our buck. And, of course, the numbers are fifth record-breaking year, even with budget cuts. We're being able to do more with less and really getting creative with private-public partners.
Very good. Now, as far as hours for the libraries and museums, you've had to cut those. How is that looking right now?
Well, we hopefully, we've cut out, we've been interviewing every job in every position. We recently eliminated over 20 jobs in the New Orleans Museum system. We won't miss a beat, but that'll save us about $1 million a year. And we just received about $5 million from the state to do all the necessary repairs at those museums because they've been leaking for years. And we've been getting rid of mold year after year, but we've never stopped all the leaks. This will stop all the leaks in all those buildings and set us on a path forward to really focus on putting our best foot forward, especially in the 300-year anniversary of New Orleans. We want to make sure we've got some great exhibits in those museums.
We noted at the start of this show, as we have the last few days, the passing of Fats Domino. And for a person born in New Orleans, as you were at the time you were born in 1959, you had to be influenced by Fats Domino.
Absolutely. It's, you know, I actually this morning pulled out a couple of my CDs to take with me on the road today to listen to them because someone like that you just think about is going to be around forever. Mm-hmm. It's such a part of the music and the culture, and his personality really made his music special.
Governor, a few weeks ago when the commotion started about NFL players kneeling and many of the Saints players participating in this during the national anthem, you were out in front with some lawmakers saying that perhaps we should consider taking away the Saints subsidies from the state. What do you think now?
Well, I didn't really comment on taking away the subsidies. Obviously, I think in state government, we should review everything we give away and make sure we get the most bang for our buck. But the reason I was in London, I didn't go to the game. I do a lot with the veterans and the Gold Star mothers. And several years ago, I stood on the sidelines of the Saints game with 12 of those mothers. And as they played the anthem, I looked over and every one of them had tears running down their face. And to know what that means to them for their sons that they lost, for anybody that disrespect, if it hurts one mother, it's one too many. And so I chose not to go to the game in London. And I just think whatever our differences are, that national anthem and that flag is sacred and should not be pulled into the political arena, and surely not at a sporting event which so many people really have a passion for supporting our Saints. So I just think it was the wrong place. And we allowed it to be hijacked, and I still feel very strongly about that.
Yesterday on this show, we had the lobbyist, Jim Nickel, on, and I thought he had a good point in that one of the best ways to show support for our country, and if there's any kind of issue to have your voice heard, is to vote. And we had a statewide election a couple of weeks ago, and only got 13.5% of the people to vote. That's unfortunate.
You know, Jim, when I ran for lieutenant governor the first time, and after the election, everybody's telling you they voted for you, they dis, and seeing how bad the vote was in that race, 30-something percent, for the next election, I had 50,000 cups printed, and I put the picture of the Vietnam Wall. And I put honor our veterans by voting, whether you vote for me or somebody else. And that's the way I try to get people. Listen, if for any reason, do it to honor those people that fought and many died, so we have that right. And we're going to have political differences. You're going to be unhappy. I think the negative advertisement is out of control, and hopefully we can reel that in some kind of way. Lafayette voted, I think, 68% in the Bill Cassidy race, but because of the negative publicity about Scott Angell creating that sinkhole, in my race, they voted 30-something percent. And had they voted 60-something percent, I wouldn't have had such a close race getting into the runoff. But the negative impact of the negative campaign in that region really affected the turnout in that governor's race.
Now, the tourism numbers for the state have been good, and I know you're touting those, but we do have some issues, particularly with crime, that you have expressed concern about. At what point does the crime issue cause us to lose tourists?
Well, there's three issues in the New Orleans region. You know, we've got the new numbers, over $1 billion in taxes spent last year by tourists, and most recently the U.S. Bureau of Labor statistics show that 6,000 new jobs in Louisiana for September 2016 to 2017, 6,000 new jobs in tourism. That's a 2.6% increase. That 6,000 jobs made up 25% of the jobs added in that year. But the real problem we've got in New Orleans is three things: the crime, the cleanliness, and new attractions. As we know, New Orleans is always going to be the major draw. We've really got to whoever the new mayor is, really put pressure on to advance those three things. But we're also doing some direct marketing with Baton Rouge and Lafayette. We're going to New York and doing a big cooking event. We're bringing a chef from Monroe, Lafayette. And we're bringing people from Lafayette, Baton Rouge, and all over the state. So we're really starting to market not just New Orleans and let people know there's more to Louisiana and there's some beautiful places to go. And we're really seeing the results. The international travel is up 37% statewide, second only to New York. So I think the efforts that we've been working on to highlight the rest of Louisiana, New Orleans' budget is more than the whole state for tourism. So we've got to make sure we let people know there's more to Louisiana than just New Orleans.
Well, Governor, once again, the 14th Louisiana Book Festival will be held tomorrow, 10 to 5, downtown Baton Rouge. A lot of locations, including the State Library, the State Capitol, the Capitol Park Museum. You can meet, you said, what, 250 authors, correct?
That's right, and 150 programs.
150 programs, all between 10 in the morning, 5 in the afternoon tomorrow. So thanks for keeping the event alive, and it's always good to talk with you, Billy Nungesser.
Good talking to you, my friend.
Take care.
A great weekend.
See you soon, Billy Nungesser. And tonight, by the way, Game 3 of the World Series, the Astros and Dodgers are tied at one game apiece. Houston, which came into existence in the National League in 1962, has never won a World Series championship. Many of us remember when they were called the Lastros. Well, the Lastros are no more, and Alex Bregman, the starting third baseman from LSU, has had two stellar games, a home run the first game off the Dodgers ace Clayton Kershaw, who beat the Astros in Game 1, and he doubled home a run, did Bregman, in Game 2. So that's tonight, Game 3. We'll be back Monday, same time, same place. Hope you have a great weekend. If you get a chance, go to the book festival. And until Monday, stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.